Welcome to episode 13 of the Needle Movement Podcast. We continue our monthly theme of how brands can best leverage email marketing. Today, our special guest is Christina Hagopian. On this episode, we dig more into email design, campaign best practices, and how to break through the noise of a crowded inbox. I'm Stephen Carl, talking to you straight from Brooklyn, New York. Now let's get on to the show. This week, we have a very special guest, Christina Hagopian. And we're in an exciting month of shows where we're honing in on email marketing because there's just so much opportunity here as it's a very effective broadcast strategy. A little bit about Christina. She is the president and creative director of Hagopian Inc., a New York City branding, e-commerce, and email design studio helping luxury and lifestyle brands, some big names like Pepsi, Lancome, and Mercedes-Benz, turn heads and compel clicks. Christina has over 20 years of experience creating powerful brand personalities, carefully crafted logos and identity packages, websites, targeted email campaigns, and more. She's also an active leader in the New York City design and entrepreneur communities. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thank you so much.
It is great to have you to talk about email.
I'm always excited to talk about email. I geek out on the email stuff.
Yeah, and I'm trying to rewire my brain to get more and more excited about email because of just how effective it is for companies. So how did you and your company, what's the origin? How did you create a specialty in email?
It really was an evolution. It happened by accident, really. We were already specializing in branding and web design for e-commerce. And we realized there was a white space in the market for a high-end solution for email. Our clients were already asking us to do it. And the fact that email has always been the largest ROI for e-commerce especially, and the main driver of revenue, it was just a natural progression. And there's very few design firms that are really good at email. There's a lot of specialty email marketing companies, but not necessarily great design. Mm-hmm. So we really saw a niche and were able to compete against some really big agencies against it and acquire some larger clients. So that's kind of how it all happened. We already started developing a portfolio of work and it's exciting.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah, it's just funny how, yeah, I think you and I have actually hit these parallel paths where, right, you're working with clients and you're feeling their pain and their problems. And, you know, you see when clients, when you say, oh, I can do email, I can help you out with this problem, and their eyes perk up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It is a little bit of a beast, right, in terms of managing all the different responsibilities within email.
It is. It's funny because when we first started, I found it as such a relief against, you know, all these big web projects that we were doing, because email's quick. It's yeah. Like, you know, one off campaign and send. Whereas websites we were building, you know, are month long and multiple months and iterations and revisions, and you just don't have that in email. But I used to think, oh, email's so easy. And now the more you know, the more it's how complex it is, and the automation and segmentation and the analytics and everything else that goes with it, it's actually more complex than just building a website in many ways. So it's definitely, like I said, been an evolution and a discovery. But the geeky analytics side of it is where the fun happens.
Yeah, exactly. And is that like in the segmentations where you find out who's engaging and where you can enhance it?
Exactly. Who's opening, who's clicking, who's unsubscribing, and why? And really digging deep into those analytics is where you start to get smart and where email starts to get smart. And that's why every marketer loves it, because of the analytics and the fact that you own your own list. You know, when you mm-hmm. own your own list in a situation of talking to your customers, it's truly where the magic happens. And it's not like you're just sending it out into an abyss of Google where they're trying to find you or not. Mm-hmm. You actually can communicate with them directly.
Yeah, I agree. I think it contrasts with some other channels. Like, you know, we see this on, say, Instagram. Like Instagram, however many followers you have, they're not all seeing the message when you post it. Because exactly. The organic, now it's, you have to pay to get a higher percentage. And the organic reach could be, I even heard it was like 10%. So if you had even 100,000 followers on Instagram, you know, only 10% of that are actually seeing the messages for all those hard fought campaigns to get more followers and stuff. So that's what's awesome about email, because you actually are getting through to these people that want to hear from you.
Whether you can get them through the junk box and get them through the filtered messages, yep, and, you know, whether they can open it, yes, but absolutely higher percentages. And same thing with Facebook, the metrics between social and email always win. It's email, then it's pay-per-click, then it's maybe social is a third or way
right. Forward. Okay, so with email, what are most brands doing wrong in their email campaigns?
Where do we begin on that one? You know, there's a lot of common challenges. Mm-hmm. Brands often believe that subscribers are willing to read a lot more content than they actually do. We often recommend short and sweet. We're constantly telling clients, can we trim this copy? Can we shorten this? Can we break this up into two messages? You know, scrolling is fine, but we also want to get to the meat and the call to action really quick and get people engaged much more quickly. And a message, you know, it's a blurb, not a novel. And we often recommend that. You know, bulk sends are also a common problem. You know, the whole batch and blast where you're just sending to one giant list. And we really believe in, like I said, the metrics, the personalization, the learnings, you know, who's opening, how can you segment? How can you segment people that have bought before or not bought before, or return customers or specific interests that they have? We highly encourage that behavior-based learnings so that you can really attribute and create a much more robust program that way. There's so much that people do that we really recommend them steering away from. A lot of times people are not optimizing for mobile. I feel like there's a huge part of our program is making things mobile first, making all of their emails mobile first. And
right.
Every single year, the metrics of mobile device opens are more and more. So making sure that their messages are designed for a mobile device before anything else.
Yeah, I guess with the full file blast, we call it spray and pray, where you just send to everybody. And there's just this, it just gets to, I noticed this too, where it's just, no matter how many times someone has purchased in the past, if they haven't opened or clicked on an email in a couple of years, just like the odds of you sending a random message to them and them opening it are pretty small.
Absolutely. We recommend cleaning those lists and getting rid of those and giving them a last incentive to stay on, because most of the time it's just not reaching their inbox or they're just choosing not to. The whole "we miss you" emails, those are intended to trigger you to either open, give them an offer, give them an incentive, or get them off your list. Because it really does affect deliverability over time if they're not opening. It's weighing down your list.
Yeah. Even in the spam folders, I'm seeing big companies appearing there.
Yeah.
I'm seeing more of that strategy of the, we're going to take you off the list unless you respond to this email. It kind of positions you well, because you're like, we don't really need to send you endless messages, especially if you're not going to open it.
Yeah. I mean, brands want the dialogue. Brands want the action. And as an email company, you're ruining our metrics. You're ruining our open rates. You're ruining our performance. So, but more importantly, it's not just vanity. It's truly about deliverability. If you have a certain percentage of your list that's continually not opening, it's dragging down the rest of the list to actually deliver properly. So we really look at that when we are analyzing the strategy behind our messages.
Right, because the automations, or when you send to the portion of the list that's much higher engagement, that opens and clicks, then you're sending deliverability. Like, I want to get your take a little bit on this, but I see it as you're sending positive signals to all the email clients out there, the Gmails, the Outlooks, because people are opening and clicking. People are not marking it as spam.
Correct.
Yeah. And then,
yeah.
Is that the full take?
That is. Yeah. It really is. It's very simple. It's the more people that are opening, the email service providers will rank you as higher, and your email browsers will rank the emails at a higher percentage of deliverability. So it's like, it's your reputation. It's your reputation score. It's saying, mm-hmm. you know, your subscribers want to read these messages. So we're going to make sure that they do. And then the more that you don't have a positive reputation, that score starts to hinder those messages from being delivered.
Got it.
Or your position in the deliverability.
Yeah, I think in terms of brands, what they're doing wrong in their campaigns, here's a hot take, and this one might be, I want to see if we think the same thing on this.
Okay.
This is about win back campaigns. Like okay. sometimes like I see people talk about spray and praying to previous buyers with like, and yeah. their eyes look like dollar bills. But I think win backs are not necessary. Like if it's win backs from over a year ago, I mean, they can get a few sales, like they're worth sending, but they're not huge revenue generation as a percentage of like where your money is coming from in email marketing.
Well, it all depends. You know, we've seen, we love to try to find out why they unsubscribed, mm-hmm. why they stopped using a service. You know, usually win back when we start talking about subscription companies or some past purchases yeah. that gone astray. Find out why, if you can, or having some sort of exit surveys of people, why they're no longer engaging with the brand. If there's a way to address that, for instance, we found out on a service company that we were working with, subscription, that they felt the clothing brands were lacking or the value was lacking or mm-hmm. you know, the speed of service is lacking. If you can identify that you've made improvements in those areas, that could be part of your win back strategy and address them head on. Previously, we know that, and actually being really honest, we know that this was something of a concern before. We've taken care of it and it's no longer, and we welcome you back. Course, it's written in a way that's much more engaging, but there are ways that that percentage gets a lot higher when you're addressing the real problems of why they left to begin with, or you're giving them some sort of major incentive that is like an offer they can't refuse, where it's like either 1 month free mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever it is, the incentive is to come back. And then it really starts to snowball from there.
Gotcha. It's a great point on Winback that I'll get to in a sec. The surveys, how are those conducted? Like, is it using a, like, there's a couple companies out there like Typeform, SurveyMonkey.
Right, right.
Like you send an email survey or?
We have done multiple, either third parties or directly on the website where, you know, Radio Buttons are our friends, starts to deliver some metrics. Every brand is different on how they want to handle that. But we really do love those exit surveys mm-hmm. or when, especially on those subscription companies, if they had to call up customer service in order to cancel, that data point is entered into why they canceled. And then we have to start to address that if we start to see a huge trend.
So an exit survey would be when they exit the website, you ask them one question about why they left.
Or if they are, in our world, we're very high in the subscription companies. Mm-hmm. So if they are receiving a service every month or having a product every month, they have to either write an email to cancel or cancel it on the website. And we always give a form field of, you know, why you're unsubscribing or why you're leaving. And then you start to tally up what those trends are.
Yes. No, that's a great point. Because you want to know why there's churn. If it's a exactly. mystery, you can't do anything about it.
Exactly. Because acquisition for a new mm-hmm. customer versus an existing customer, that's why those winbacks are still low-hanging fruit. Even if it's a very small percentage right. of the cancellations, that percentage is still easier to win than somebody new.
I liked your take on this for winbacks because I think traditionally winback was, let's throw them some money and see what they do. But mm-hmm. I think your additional angle on this is that I could do that, but if I know why they left, if I know their pain point, let's address that yes. head on and try to
yes.
tell them that we hear you and this is why you should come back.
Exactly. Or you start to really think about the benefits of the product or the service or and really start to communicate that in a way that's like, huh, I need to give this brand another chance or let me take a second look. Mm-hmm. And oh, maybe I dismissed them too quickly. You don't, the psychology of buyers, it's really important to just kind of get into their heads and really think like them.
Yes, definitely. Okay. So now, you know, we were talking about, or you mentioned subscription e-commerce and you've worked with multiple clients in subscription e-commerce, has some experience. So what's happening in that space right now?
Oh gosh. Well, the world of subscriptions, you know, started, I think, with several big box companies, like we talked about Birchbox previously, and it started to become a wave and a trend for the subscription boxes. But the service, especially digital services, it is a huge market for email, for subscription services and products delivered digitally.
Right.
And that cycle, that customer journey, can be tracked digitally through email in such a natural way. Whether that's the acquisition, the retention, the winning back, that following that customer journey is really, really important. Like I said, acquiring a new customer costs that 25 times more than retaining one. So having that subscription customer over time is critical. So lead nurturing, making sure that they sign up, finding out what's going to make them stay, that's so important for and essential for the subscription companies.
I think everything is, I mean, things are moving more towards subscriptions because that idea of, well, it kind of, it lowers your perceived cost when you're only paying for something on a monthly basis instead of one time. But I think even for, like for digital services, like I have a language learning app that I pay for monthly. It's just, I use it. It's not a one-time purchase. And I find it, and getting me back, it works on both sides.
Right. I mean, even, you know, Adobe turned everything turned cloud and, you know, we're forced to have cloud-based software versus downloads. So I think the world is turning subscription and having that specialty and having that understanding of the customer journey through subscription is super important.
Yeah. Even things like Afterpay, where it's not a subscription, but it kind of resembles the structure where if you want to buy something, if you want to buy an expensive product, you can stagger the cost over a number of months.
Right, right. Or for instance, we just started work, or we did a pitch at least for a company with water filtration. Mm-hmm. And the real crux is the actual device isn't where the money is. It's the repetition in the filters. It's more about buying once, but the real money is how many times can they reorder those filters?
Right.
So, you know, having that mentality for any business for repeat purchasing is really where email shines.
Yes. Yes. Because one of the biggest problems in e-commerce in general is buyers that are one and done. And
exactly.
You know,
and in our business, in any business, you know, you want a long-term relationship with your customers.
Yeah. So it is why like every business needs to have that retention mentality. You know, even something like one of the hot topic right now is Casper, because they just did an IPO filing.
Yes.
And one of the critiques of the business and the thing, one of the things that they have to overcome is you only buy a mattress once a decade or, you know, once a number of years. So that's why they added additional products and why they're trying to position themselves as a, like the world of sleep because of that reality. Right. But because repeat purchases, you know, are so critical.
And that's what we call a considered purchase, you know, because you're only buying it however many years and because it's a high value, high priced item, it's not a luxury item, it's a necessity, but it's not necessary, you know, it's a considered purchase. It takes a little bit of time to decide which one you want, which brand. And that lead nurturing is really, really important from a product standpoint, even more so with an email customer journey of how you educate the client, educate the customer on that product to make that purchase. How many touch points does it take?
How many does it take? What's the what's the over under on that? It's right. There used to be that there was this old saying that like you need to hear something seven times to want to buy it. And I've even heard 15 touch points before.
Right. Right. It really depends on the product, you know, impulse buys or how much it costs or what incentive or is it an emotional purchase? Is it a considered purchase? All of those things. Is it a luxury purchase?
So a nurture campaign when I'm earlier in the buying cycle.
Right. That real sales funnel, right? Yep. When you look at that customer journey, you know, we often look at from the moment they subscribe or the moment they've entered into your field. What message comes first? What kind of welcome do you give them? It's that first touch point for the brand. We often recommend three welcomes at mm-hmm. least, and timed in a sequence so that that first touch point is that, you know, real warm welcoming. The second one is a little bit more education about the brand, a little bit behind the scenes. The third one might go a little bit deeper and offer an incentive to keep exploring. So that little wave and little drips is why they call them drips. And that's just the welcome series. And then we come up with education series and then offer series. And the content is endless. And the content is the most important thing for email.
All right. So let's see. So with welcome, right, like someone signs up to the email list and they get, if we're going through a three-part welcome, that's, you know, when they sign up, they get email number one. And let's right. say 3 days later, they get email number two. And 4 days later, they get right. email number three.
Exactly. And then we kind of wave them into the master campaign list and then start segmenting from there based off behavior. That's the real, that's when email gets smart. Is half of it is automation and half of it is figuring out those customer journeys.
All right. So let's map these. So welcome one to three. Like, let's say one is kind of a quick, like, yay, you signed up the list, you've joined the family, or is...
Exactly. And we often encourage them to connect on social because statistically, those that are follow both email and social yeah. start to feel a stronger connection to the brand. Mm-hmm. So we immediately invite them, like, can't wait for your next email. Don't forget to follow us and, you know, have that little nudge. That's a big CTA for
us. Yeah, I like that. That's a good time to send them. Like, they're already signed up on email. So they're like, hey, I'll follow them on Instagram.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's better. Like, I remember in the past, there used to be separate messages on follow us on social, right. and those didn't really work that well. So sounds good. Email number one. So then email number two, is that like maybe a letter from the founder or something, Brandt?
We've done that more for email number three. The second one, we've often done, you know, more like an education series. Like, is it a little bit about the ingredients of the product mm-hmm. or is it a little bit about, you know, behind the scenes or having some testimonials and all of that education and nudging. The third one, we've often done a letter from the founder or a little bit more about the company. That's, we really see a drop off on first, second, and third emails. That third one doesn't get opened as nearly as much. So we want to get the kickoff. That first welcome is the highest open among all right. series. Because you've got a very engaged audience member. You've got someone that literally just signed mm-hmm. up. And sometimes they've been given an offer to sign up. So they're really warm to buy yep. or they want that code or whatever it is that you're offering them or the download or whatever incentive you've provided that for that email. So they're hunting in that inbox to look for it. So that open rate for the first one is critical. So making sure that that first touch point is super valuable, we often recommend. And then the second one, and so forth. So the third one is less, if they don't open it, it won't kill them.
Right. So you're targeting future campaigns based on their interaction in that welcome?
We target the based off of multiple campaigns mm-hmm. after that. So after that, they'll maybe start to get some regular messages, you know, whether that's content, whether that's information, net education. It all depends on the content calendar, but, you know, is it a holiday, whatever, they'll go into the regular cycle. But then when we start to segment based off of behavior from that.
Okay. So I was wondering on a technology side, like for systems and platforms that you're using, like which email service provider, and if there's any other tools, like the main tools.
Yeah. I mean, we're platform agnostic. A lot of our more enterprise clients mm-hmm. are on their own servers or they're on more enterprise level servers, Salesforces of the right. world, Experians of the mm-hmm. world. Our smaller clients are in the MailChimp or Klaviyo's. Right. You know, we HubSpot, we work with all of them. We don't like to be a referral source for one platform yep. because honestly, if it's working for them, we don't want to move ESPs. It's actually a really big headache to move them. So if it was not broke, we don't recommend moving unless it's absolutely necessary. But as far as tools, we use a lot of testing tools, either email on acid or litmus, so that we can predict how our emails are going to behave in certain browsers. And we do a lot of pre-testing in those platforms so that we check and balance and preview everything before we hit send. And I feel like that's a critical
right.
tool to have. It's kind of, you know, baseline for us. So we always use those.
Right. So Litmus and Email on Acid, they are testing platforms for when you create the email, then you can see how it renders on Outlook, Gmail.
Exactly.
And all that. Yeah. Because it will look different on definitely than what you might expect.
Exactly. And also simulate mobile and tablet so that you can see how things are breaking. And it's essential. All my developers use it and send me the pretest link to preview. And there are some browsers that just are wonky and a lot more work, and you can preview it before.
What's your least favorite browser? Or your least favorite client?
Oh.
Let's not pick favorites, but like, what is difficult to...
Well, you know, Outlook has always been one where they don't render animation as easily, or not all of the updated browsers, if they're a legacy browser. So we love using animation, and it's always like, wah, wah, if it's like you have to use your static GIF. So, and I think like anyone's on Yahoo and AOL should consider moving on from their inboxes, because they're really missing out. It's our job to make them look good and everything. So we really just have to bear it. I think the world is moving in Outlook and Gmail. Those are our...
Yeah, I agree.
And the Gmail promotions tab is, you know, there's a lot of discussion on my email geek groups about getting out of promotions and how do you get into the main inbox. Yep. And there's a lot of opinions where we don't belong in the main inbox. You know, we are a promotional message, and it's okay to live there as long as we're not getting into junk or bull. Mm-hmm. Because what you have to do to strip down to be in the main message and not have images, and it becomes so non-branded that we almost say it's okay to be in the promotions. You just have to make sure they're opening it within the promotion.
Got it. So let's go quickly to education campaigns, because those don't get as much headway, where you're doing email. I guess you're not necessarily having a discount. So what does that encompass?
So we always recommend that brands look at email as this two-way dialogue and not this one-sided conversation where you're just throwing out information, right? So we try to discover what are the frequently asked questions about your product and begin to develop a content strategy around that and think about that journey that we've been talking about, that customer journey. It's really the exact same thing when you're trying to sell something through either your website or through the phone or through the mail or through any other means. Email is just your tool. So you have to replicate that sales cycle and address every point through email. You know, what are the questions that are asking? What are the pain points, like you mentioned? What problems can we help them to solve quickly and lead them to purchase in a very natural progression, and that's not pushing? Or what incentive can you drive them to make that final push? Mm-hmm. So we really just have to think in the minds of the customer.
What are the frequently asked questions that come up the most?
Yes.
With the product? And that's those questions and objections are what's going to fill in the education campaign.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's different for every product. It's different for every service.
Yep.
It's so unique to you. Or what makes you special? What makes you different from the competitors? What differentiates you? It's all the same sales that you and I do.
Right. Yeah. I see what you mean with education. Because that will get them over the hurdle.
Right.
Right. It's not always the incentive or the offer that stops people.
Right.
It's the value, what they think they're getting.
Right. Exactly.
Got it. Okay. So, you know, so the tough mission is everyone's inbox is a complete cluster and it is a mad mess. So how do you break through the noise with emails, like a really crowded inbox, to get your message through?
Well, I think I read somewhere, what is it? The average person receives 90 emails per day. I don't even know if that's in every account, every bulk folder, that's like filtered messages. So you need to think about your brand and know that you're not the only one sending that message, right? So people forget that so much. You need to think about whether you're delivering value, whether you're delivering any bit of excitement, we can't forget that subscribers are people first. They're not just email addresses. So putting yourself in the shoes of that subscriber is a really important aspect about what they need, what they want. Is it a value play? Is it an exclusive just for them? We talk a lot about attention grabbing subject lines that you are begged to be clicked on versus mm-hmm. just there. So there's a lot of psychology that goes behind a subject line that gets open. Mm-hmm. Is it shouting at you? Does it have an emoji or some sort of exclamation or some sort of punctuation? You know, there's certain statistics that certain combinations of words will bump up the open rate or decrease the open rate. It's all testing, you know, whether you can break in that inbox, whether you can break in that, it's not only getting in the inbox, but getting opened, getting clicked on. What call to action are you asking them to do that's going to compel them to act? So if you want to stay in the inbox, we often say you have to behave like a friend who's at their welcome door, not annoying sales guy that you want to avoid. It's about giving.
Right. It's about them. It's not about you. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you have to be a giver. You have to think it's like, what's in it for me? Mm-hmm. You know, what's in it for them? What's in it for the subscriber? And if you're always answering that, then you're going to come up with some good emails.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, it is that, right. It goes into the marketing psychology, which is overcoming objections and really communicating benefits to, like, it's about them. It's about what they're going to get out of what, right. whatever you're offering and how it's going to make their life better, simpler, you know, whatever on the list. Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Right. Cool. So we will wrap up soon. This has been amazing. It's great to have your perspective on this, especially with all the big brands that you've worked with and different systems. I think surprise and delight, that's like a cool point where you want to surprise and delight your audience, where when they don't expect it, you know, give them something that enhances their relationship. Can they surprise and delight their audiences?
We love this side of email. You know, the everyday messages get really tired, but this goes back to what value are you bringing into your inbox and give them a reason to stay year after year. You know, I get certain emails from brands on my birthday where I'm waiting for them. You know, it is a little bit of either they're giving me something or they're just surprising me. You know, we created a branded message for Pepsi's birthday messages where they actually got sent on everybody's specific birthday. And that had to have a data point where you collected mm-hmm. date of birth, at least the date, not necessarily the year, and created this very branded, very cool animation. And that got their second highest open next to their welcome messages. And it wasn't selling anything. It wasn't doing anything other than giving a feel-good message and wishing them a genuine happy birthday. And people remember those things. They remember the brands that give you that feeling of it's not just about the sale. And we did something similar for a jewelry company that we were pitching as well, where we thought about that customer journey and when people are buying the most, and an anniversary for, you know, sending those reminders for the anniversary, or if they had a past purchase of a specific collection, mm-hmm. they already bought the bracelet. Are you giving them the matching earring? And it's genuinely trying to help them create the perfect gift. So making sure that you are giving them something they love and need and want. And when your emails start getting smart with that data and with the clicks and the metrics, and that's when it starts to shine, and that's when it delights. So we're always looking for that type of message to create and send.
Yeah, I was thinking with birthdays, like that is, like, I can't think of anyone on the planet that I wouldn't mind if they said happy birthday to me. Like,
right?
You know, it's just like, oh, you remembered, you know.
I know.
So everybody loves that message.
It does. Yeah.
I think even anniversaries are nice too, where it's, you know, if someone purchased something, it's a good, like, anniversary in a way can have a better spin than just win back. Like, you purchased a year ago, or you purchased at this
right
interval.
Right.
You know, but that's intriguing with the data component of it, where so when you deliver special offers, is it like, so if I look at click data and I find it's a clothing company, and I find that the customer is always looking at jeans. Is it that sort of scenario where I'm going to show a lot more jeans emails to that audience?
Yeah. I mean, I give this example when I give talks about email and smart email, and it's preference centers, it's behavior, it's predictability of clicks. I signed up for Saks emails and they know that I have a certain affinity for specific brands, and they'll start to serve me emails. It's like a curated just for you message. And it'll be all the brands that I clicked on and the new items in the collection. And it's brilliant because guess who's always clicking on it? They know I'm going to click on the same brand. Oh, there's a new season of Droit and there's a new season of certain cashmere companies that I'm constantly clicking on that they know I'm going to click. It's data that's already proven, you know, however many times previously. And so they start to serve those brands back to me. And that's smart email.
Yeah, and I think it is very smart because even the rules on that are not so complex.
It's not.
Right. They know what brands that you're clicking on. So they can pull. Correct. Pulling brand data is not too hard.
Right.
And then serving the newest arrivals in that product category. You know, like I like that type of automation because, yeah, it wouldn't take a month to create that. It's just,
Right. And a shoe company, I was following M. Gemmy. It's a beautiful Italian luxury shoe. They have gorgeous emails and they'll send you a message. It's just in your size, you know, find your size and you're going to click on your size. Well, then that's a data point that they can serve and say, you know, these are shoes available in your size now. And any brand who's starting to do that is smart.
Yes, totally agree. Totally agree. And I guess quickly, just wondering what you were thinking about SMS as a form of marketing, because I know sometimes with email, SMS is compared to it in some way.
I mean, look, if you can have someone's email and I think any cross-channel messaging is always more effective. Right. If you get an email and if you get a direct mail piece, that always performs higher than just one channel. Yep. I personally am such a visual designer, obviously. So I'm always biased to the visual versus the copy and the text. We all are married to our devices, right? So if it's coming in through then I believe it'll be effective, but I also believe it's more effective in conjunction with another channel.
Yeah. And that's a great point because it's not picking favorites and that one is going to take 100% of the business and the other is going to completely go away. It's a lot of it's just the game of oftentimes everything is so tribal these days and shoppers are married to different devices or direct mail, different ways to interact with brands. So it's just the whole mix. So, you know, this is great. Thank you so much for coming on, Christina.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me, Stephen.
We don't get to talk about email as much as we should. Now I know what to talk about with you next.
We'll have a lunchtime conversation about books and open rates.
I will think very hard about what subject line to send you. So.
There you go. I appreciate that.
So if someone wants to learn more about you or your company, Hagopian Inc., how can they find you?
Oh, we have a lot of work and information on our website. So you get to see some past projects and our email address. Hagopian, Hagopian Inc. with a K.com. I wouldn't have named my business Hagopian Inc. again. I didn't think about spelling back in the day, but we're almost 20 years old, so we're staying with it. But I'd love to set up a call and talk to anyone about email. I do truly geek out on this stuff. So if I could help any organization facing some challenges that can be solved through email, we'd love to talk.
Perfect. And congratulations on 20 years in the business. That's a great milestone.
Almost. We're at year 18. It'll be here before you know it.
You're coming in close. So thank you so much, Christina. It's great to talk to you.
Always. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. This episode is sponsored by Needle Movement. Needle Movement specializes in digital marketing and strategy for entrepreneurs, brands that give back, and those that are just curious on how they can do more. Business is evolving, and that's one reason why coaching has become such a phenomenon this year, because companies can't keep up. That's why everyone is hiring coaches to make them better in marketing, branding, and e-commerce. Learn more about our affordable coaching packages. At Needle Movement, we function like a second brain to a marketing team.
We believe that it's not just one area you can get better on, probably a series of optimizations, and that's what makes us unique.
Telling you where to get that best return on investment, which channels work,
how to optimize email marketing, do SEO affordably,
sharing our formula for high converting marketing strategy, and most important, we steer you clear of all those rookie mistakes. If you like what you heard, and you're here with me still, so you must have enjoyed a nugget or two, head on over to needlemovement.com to find other episodes, show notes, and more. We're still in the early days of this podcast, so would super appreciate if you headed over to iTunes or your favorite podcast app to subscribe and write a review for the show. Be sure to tune in next week for another new episode.